Hello and welcome to the Pots and Trowels podcast. I'm Martin Fish and joined by Jill and Sean.
Hello.
And we've got lots happening this week, including a visit by me to the new RHS Urban Show in Manchester, where I had a lovely chat with Jason Williams, the cloud gardener.
And we've got some questions from regular listeners, a couple on trees.
And if you've got a question, make sure you drop us an email, info@potsandtrowels.com. But first, let's hear from the cloud gardener.
Jason, you're really well known as the cloud gardener for the work that you've done at various flower shows, Chelsea, Tatton. But how did it all start for you as the cloud gardener?
Well, it actually started in 2020 on my 18th floor balcony garden. And I picked up a marigold during one of my trips during furlough when we could only go to Aldi or a garden centre. So I actually went to B&Q and got myself a set of marigolds, put them out onto my garden. And I slowly decided that I was going to turn my balcony into a garden. And in actual fact, I wasn't very successful. And so I was looking around for some balcony gardening content through social media and on TV to find some inspiration, and there was nothing. So I just ended up having to learn by myself.
A steep learning curve, but you are now known as the cloud gardener, and you know it's led on to doing exhibits at Chelsea. We've done various things over the years at the Tatton Park Flower Show, and here we are now, this new urban show in Manchester, which is amazing, isn't it? And you're doing a big area here.
Yes, so I've in essence created my very own development here in the urban show, and it's a collection of 7 gardens, and they're designed to showcase how can we make our towns and cities greener. And the concept or the show planning started in September, and I was totally wiped out after Tatton, after doing the alleyway in Tatton, and I vowed...
It was a big exhibit.
That was huge. It was absolutely huge. 14 metres. It was huge. And I still volunteer there, so I, for the past 12 months or so, or for the next 12 months, I'm volunteering there, helping them to keep that garden going. But I didn't want to do a show garden for the sake of doing a show garden, and I didn't want to do a show garden that costs a huge amount of money, because that just doesn't resonate to people in the city, and I think that would send the complete wrong message. Mm. So I really thought long and hard about what I could do to make a difference, and I kept coming back to this question, how do you make our towns and cities greener? And it just evolved, this concept. So we have 4 balconies, and 4 of these balconies have been co-designed between myself and students from Manchester Metropolitan University through their RISE programme. None of the students have any form of horticultural experience whatsoever. They all come from law, interior design, marketing, and in essence, it was a way to kind of pull together some of their unique talents. They joined this project because they have a passion for greening, and I gave them, instead of the huge budgets that we're used to for show gardens, I gave them a budget of £500. So they're £500 for all 4 of those balcony gardens. They also face north, east, south and west. So the planting is different in each one of those gardens. And that's to teach people at the show what you can do in these small spaces and how to plant properly for your space. We then have the Knotcut Shade Garden. So Knotcut is an absolutely fantastic garden centre, and we have one in Manchester in Ashton. And what I love most about going to that garden centre is there are some that you go there and the team don't necessarily know anything about plants. Sometimes there are students there who are just there for a job, and you go and the plants are half dead and no one seems to care. But Knotcut, they would not allow that. They have really high standards, and people within those teams really know and care about plants and can help educate. So that's something that I really wanted to showcase. I also wanted to have that form of accessibility. So everything that you see there in that Knotcut garden, you can actually purchase from Knotcut. So you can go to the store today and buy everything and recreate that in your own home, once again, as a renter. Mm. And then this space here that we're standing in front of is the Urban Cloud Farm. Now, this is my shout out to developers. Okay. Developers do a really, really poor job sometimes on their green spaces. And so what I'm showcasing to developers is to have a rethink. Rather than just your standard car park planting, or just, especially if you've got a housing association, just doing lawn, you could create an allotment space, which would then give your community in these towers space to grow. Then the final garden, garden number 7, is the communal space within that development. So often when you have these big, tall skyscrapers, sometimes they come in sets of 3. This communal space will be that area in the middle between those 3 tower blocks. And so normally the developers will just input into a spreadsheet how many shrubs they need for these spaces. The landscaping team will then go and put those in. If you take a walk through that communal space, you will see edibles, you'll see shade planting, you'll see some sunny perennials. There's a real mixture. And the idea is to show the developers that in actual fact, what you could do is create these communal spaces, have your gardening teams in there, and then encourage the residents to then come and use these spaces. And what I've done is that planting there was actually designed by Liz from Plant Cooperative, and Liz and Andy from Plant Cooperative, they work with Noma, which is a developer here in Manchester, and they do the planting around the co-op building. And this is the ethos that they have in their own development. So they work with the developer and they actively do this. Mm. So when I've spoken to developers today at the show and they've agreed and thought this was a wonderful process, but they had questions about pricing and how do you do this? Well, actually, I brought receipts to the show. So I brought people who actually do this on a day-to-day basis and have done for the past 3 years. So there's absolutely no way that any of these developers can tell me that it cannot work, because these people can.
And I think what you're doing, you've got so many ideas, so much inspiration people can take away, because you've just proved that in a very small space you can have so many beautiful plants and rich diversity there, which you wouldn't ordinarily get. This is Zar that's with me. Zar and I are looking around the show together. Zar, this is Jason. Zar,
we've met at Tatton, I think.
Have met, and as Zar judges at flower shows and has created Chelsea Gardens. What do you think of this whole idea, Zar?
I think it's tremendously important. I really do. I think it's very informative. I think your bit here is inspirational. And, you know, it really shows what you can do. You know, if you live in a city and you haven't got a space, or you haven't got much money, yeah, this illustrates that you can still have beautiful things around you.
Absolutely. And if that, this area we're looking at was just a bit of grass or just gravel, it would, yeah, be boring. But you've just brought it to life, Jason. Exactly. I'm amazed. I mean, I don't know what you do in your spare time.
Spare time? What is that? Yeah. The one thing I would say is one of the things I'm proud of is that all of the gardens are being relocated somewhere. So some of the balconies are being relocated to local nurseries, schools. The communal space is being relocated to a local school. The Knockcut Shea Garden is also going back to the site, so people who can't get to see the show will get, yeah, to enjoy the garden there. But then lastly, I wanted the garden to have a legacy. So we've done that through the relocation process, but I'm also really happy to announce that I've worked with Bernard, who's the chairman of Northwest in Bloom, and we've created a brand new category in Bloom, and that is for developers, and it's called Urban. So now developers, Northwest in Bloom, brand new category called Urban, and now the developers will be able to submit their green spaces into In Bloom, so that we can then try to hold them a bit more accountable, but also so that they can showcase their own thoughts and processes behind improving their own green spaces.
Mm, brilliant. Absolutely.
It also gives them incentive and backing, you know, because probably they don't know anything about gardening. They need the backing to do this.
In the Northwest, we have over 500 community groups in Bloom. So we have one of the highest amounts of community groups within in Bloom in the Northwest. So the idea behind it is if a developer wanted to participate, but they weren't sure what they were doing, I could speak to Bernard, and Bernard will be able to allocate a community group that lives nearby, and then start to foster some connections which again could only help to improve community.
Yeah, it's great, and I'm sure it's going to be really, okay, really sorry. Successful. I'm going to let you go because I know we're running late. There's somebody going to drag you on.
Yes, yes.
Well done, Jason.
No worries.
It's great. I'm sure you'll get lots of interest over the next
Thank
4
you.
Days.
Thank
Have a
you
rest
very much.
Afterwards, and we'll see you at a show later on in the season.
I'll see you at Harrogate.
See, oh yeah, well, you're there. Right, see you there in a week
you,
or so.
See you in a week.
See you then.
I think it's brilliant that gardening can be kind of that broad, and people who may only have a small space can do that, and that there's somebody out there championing that. Actually, not just somebody championing it, but somebody who's lived it, right?
Yeah.
That, exactly. And it is from experience with him, because he had no gardening knowledge when this all started for him in lockdown in 2020. So he's come a long way and learnt an awful lot.
Yeah, and as he said, he was desperate for information and there was nothing available. There was nothing online about balcony gardening or just gardening in a small space, and over COVID, you know, if you were lucky enough to have a garden to be able to escape into, we really appreciated that, didn't we? Having
we did.
The garden, it
yes.
was. You know, it was,
looks
it
like
was...
we missed a trick there with the videos. We needed to do some videos on balconies back
exactly.
then.
Yeah. All we need is a balcony. That's the thing.
Well, that's the problem. We weren't allowed to go to a balcony.
No,
we have a balcony,
exactly.
Really,
no.
And the whole concept of this new show, because this is a very first for the RHS, the Royal Horticultural Society. Their shows are normally, you know, people know the Chelsea Flower Show and Hampton Court. So they're always in a lovely setting in a parkland or in the countryside somewhere. And this show is all about bringing people together that probably haven't gardened before, that live in cities where they haven't got much in the way of garden. It might be a small garden, it might be a balcony like Jason's got. So they probably think the big flower shows aren't for them. So this is a new concept, first time they've done it. And, you know, it's in an old railway depot next to Piccadilly Station in Manchester. And you'd look at it and think, this is a derelict building. Yeah. And it was just full, no windows, no artificial light in there, very echoey, very noisy in there, but just full of lots of ideas and inspiration from people trying to get people in the cities to garden.
So presumably there weren't nurseries selling trees and large shrubs. It was
there were some, but not large ones. But anything that you could essentially grow in a small space or a container. So, you know, there were some little displays with small dwarf trees in containers. So I think it was trying to illustrate that even if you live in an inner city and you've got a small space, you can still have some trees and shrubs and fruit and vegetables and all the things that you can have in a bigger garden. You've just got to look at it and come at it from a different angle.
Talking about urban, we've got scaffolders here. It's making Marley bark. So if you're hearing little yips and yaps and barks in the background, every time they drop a pole, you know, because I'm fair, not quite as urban as that, but, you know, we're fairly close to the city.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, just as a quick aside, before we get into a bit more, one of the things that he mentioned was obviously people on a budget. And I was actually thinking that you mentioned £500 for a balcony. That sounded like quite a lot of money for somebody who's perhaps living in a flat that might be rented and they want to do some of the outside space. You don't need to spend quite that amount, do you?
Wasn't that for all four gardens, though?
No, I think that was for each one.
I wasn't sure, but I did think that what would it be if it was £125? Yeah. That's still a fair amount of money. But, I mean, at a garden centre, it wouldn't go very far, would it, I suppose?
No,
not really. And I think it's one of those things that you could spend £5,000 if you wanted, if you bought mature plants and very expensive ornaments and things. But I think, you know, I think the point probably Jason was trying to get across is you don't have to spend a fortune. And yes, to some people, £500 is probably a lot of money. I think you could, if you spent £100, you could still buy a few plants, a few packets of seeds and still get lots of colour and interest. So I think you can tailor it to suit your budget, to be honest.
I love the fact
there's
that
a lot of upcycling things you could do as well, aren't there? You know, you can make pots out of things and all that sort of side of it. And sorry, Jill, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I love the fact that he'd got each balcony facing in a different direction. Just so practical and well thought out, isn't it? So there are going to be issues with north, south, east and west balconies, aren't there? You know, there's no ideal one, really.
Well, no, I mean, if you're... I think this is one of the things he's told me before. If you're on a north-facing balcony, then you get no sunlight as such. You get light, but not sunlight. If you're on a south-facing one, it can be like an oven and it can literally singe your plants. So you've got to choose your plants carefully, depending on your aspect. So,
and potential reflection of the building and all sorts, aren't
exactly, you? Yes. You know, and you get the wind effect if you're high up and all sorts of things. Mm. So there's a lot to take into account. So, yeah, it's good that he's doing it.
It made me smile when he was talking about dead plants in certain supermarkets and garden centres, because that is your bugbear, isn't it? Yes. When you get a Dutch trolley full of plants outside a supermarket and some of them are just, wilting, bless them, for lack of care. Yeah.
Grumpy old man comes out in
grumpy
it, doesn't
Grumpy old gardener,
it?
Yeah. You
need to water these. One thing he went into a bit of detail on, which I think is really interesting and perhaps we need to unpack a bit, is, you know, the idea of developers. And he got into a bit of this new category in bloom. Can we talk a bit about that? What's in bloom for a start? And I mean, he's mentioned Northwest in bloom. Is this nationwide in bloom?
It is, yeah. It's now called Britain in Bloom, and the RHS play a major part of it. It's been running, I think this year is their actual 60th anniversary, and I think it might be Hampton Court are celebrating it, and there's going to be a garden built to honour the 60 years. And so there is a national Britain in Bloom, but then there are regions. So you get North West in Bloom, Yorkshire in Bloom, East Midlands in Bloom, lots of in Blooms all around the country that run regional competitions. And they can be towns, villages, cities, community groups, all doing their voluntary work to just make everywhere look nice. Big emphasis on sustainability now. It's not all about pretty flowers, it's about encouraging wildlife and diversity. And it's a very active group still on. And it's good to know that even in cities, there are people doing their in bloom work, trying to make the cities more attractive and wildlife friendly.
It's not just about the day, is it? When the judges come round, you have to sort of show what you've been doing all through the year.
Oh, yeah, it's an on-year thing. And it's not just about being pretty, as I say, and picking up litter. It is that whole picture, getting the community involved and sort of, you know, getting the message out to schools and everybody. So it's a really, really good organisation, all done by volunteers.
And does somebody kind of put forward, I don't know, a roundabout and say, this is our roundabout, please will you judge it? Or do the team come to the whole city and have a drive around and look at the whole thing? Do you know how, is it that?
No, well, what will happen is the judges will have dates when they come and judge your town, village, whatever it is, and the committee on the In Bloom group will work out a route so they can take them and show them what they want. There is some sort of planning done in advance. They don't just suddenly appear and say, show me your roundabout, you know when they come in. They all work really hard to do it. It's a great thing.
Excellent, good stuff. Remember, if you've got a question for the team, a gardening question, drop us an email. The email address is info@potsandchiles.com. And if you're not sure how to spell any of that, it's all in the show notes.
And we've got some questions coming up in the next part of the podcast. But first, let's go back to the show and have a chat with Zara.
Zara, you're used to being at flower shows as a judge and also as a designer of show gardens. So this, the very first RHS urban show in Manchester, all undercover. So what's your initial thoughts now we've had a wander around?
Well, I was a bit sceptical to begin with. You know, I didn't know quite how it was going to be and what it would be like underneath the big railway, old railway line. But I think the RHS wanted to show people that they can produce a show for the people living in cities, and especially this Manchester area, which is absolutely fabulous. They have done a really, really wonderful job, and it seems to all the exhibitors seem to have been attracted to the urban bit and changed their perhaps normal exhibits that they might have at Chelsea or Tatton or Harrogate and tempered it to the urban look, and there's lots to buy, really nice exhibitors, lots of food and wine.
Lots of that, yes there is, and it smells delicious.
Nice champagne
food.
Bar at the end.
Yes, and we might go there.
And interesting talks.
Yes.
We've just been up to see a famous rapper, and I can't remember his name.
No, I can't.
But he was talking about how important horticulture and gardening is, talking with Tom Massey. So it's a really, really good show.
I think so. And I'm impressed by the mix in there because, as you say, it's an urban show. It's designed for people, city living. We've had a chat with Jason, but there's an awful lot of plants in there that would be perfect for growing on a balcony or a small urban garden. And lots of houseplants, of course, so that it encourages people to grow inside their homes. So good content.
And I hope it'll give people confidence to do more in their houses, to give the pleasure that we get growing outside, that they can grow on their balcony.
Absolutely. And the great thing is, because it's all undercover in this old big iconic railway shed here called, at Mayfield, isn't it? Whatever the weather outside, and because it does occasionally rain in Manchester, it's fine today, but whatever the weather outside, it's dry in there, so it's not going to be spoilt by the weather.
It's brilliant.
It is, good. Yeah. Right, yeah. Shall we have one last look before we go?
We all might have then. A glass of champagne, you never know.
I think that'd be a jolly good idea. Yes, I'll get my wallet out.
So come on, Martin, did you get some champagne then?
Sadly, no. We would have done, but we were in a rush. We had to get a taxi. Zar is a garden designer. Her name is Zar Tolmash. She's a garden designer and we judge at flower shows together. So we'd been to a committee meeting at RHS Bridgewater the day before. So it was a flying visit to look at the urban show and we both had to get away. But it was really good, really enjoyed it. And I think for the first one, they've got something to build on. And there's lots of people there. I couldn't believe how many people were there. So there's obviously a need for urban shows.
Brilliant. That's fantastic. And I look forward to hearing your rapping later after, you know, getting some influence.
Well, I'm going to... do a garden rap.
No.
That's,
no, don't encourage
Let's swerve that one and get into some listeners' questions. Where should we start with this? Jill, do you want to read one of the questions out?
Yeah, well, we have one of our regular listeners, Alison, has previously asked us a question about bluebells, which we answered a couple of weeks ago. But she's got another question for us and she's been asked to call on our expertise again. So she's really appreciative that she has passed on her love of gardening to her children. They're well grown up and living independently. So she really likes that, spending some time with the children, doing some gardening with them and passing on advice. But it's her daughter Hannah and her husband who she's asking about now. So they're about to get their first house in August. And although they're looking ahead to sort of, you know, the garden in 2025, Hannah has an idea for a creamy white and soft green palette of colours. So Alison has managed to recommend some plants. So she's sort of suggested some white perennial geraniums and Astrantias, hostas and Narcissus and some tulips for next spring. But Hannah would like to include some silver birches. And here lies the question. So is there any way of keeping them slightly smaller so they don't envelop her garden with too much canopy? They have a south-facing garden. So in order to maintain the right conditions for the shade lovers, she appreciates that shade will be needed. But she just wonders if there are some types of silver birch that don't reach the lofty heights of telegraph poles.
Right, OK. Good question and lovely choice of tree for a garden silver birch. And the common silver birch, the Betula pendula that you see growing out in woods, does get quite tall. So a lot of the sort of named cultivars don't get as tall as that one. I mean, the one that lots of people plant, and we've put one in our garden here, is a little, it's not a big one to start with because you can buy them huge. But I always think with birch, it's better to plant fairly small. They establish better than buying these large specimens. And the one we've planted is Jack Montii, which has got those lovely white stems. And we've planted one with a multi-stem. It's got four stems. So as it grows, it almost makes a little mini copse. There's another one that, again, doesn't get anywhere near as big as the native birch that grows in the wild. And that one is called Trinity College. And that one, again, beautiful white bark, same graceful shape as the birch, but it's a much smaller version and makes it ideal then for smaller gardens. And another one that is worth growing, and not one I've planted myself personally, but it's one that if we got room and I could squeeze it in, Mrs. Fish, I probably want. No. It's called Snow Queen. Again, it's got beautiful white stems. So there's three there that would be ideal for a garden situation. You can buy them, you know, you see them in some garden centres and nurseries, and they're sort of 20-year-old trees in, you know, pots that are 4 feet across and the trees are 15 feet tall. And I think sometimes birch don't settle in well. So I would buy one from a garden centre in a 10-litre pot. It's like a 2-gallon bucket, 10 litres, and the tree might be, you know, 4 or 5 feet tall, something like that. So a young, it's still going to be 2 or 3 years old. So it's not a small sapling, but they get the roots out and establish so much quicker.
Good stuff. So we've got another question in from a regular listener, Jim, over in the United States. Thanks for the email, Jim, and hello back to you. He's mentioning that I did say that I've been to his neck of the woods. So yes, lovely to connect again. His question is this. They love watching the Pots and Trials every week. Obviously, that's the videos that we make.
Good, good.
And they never miss. We've got some great information over the years. They live in Concord, Massachusetts in the United States, and they've got a large perennial bed with a number of fairly young plants. So there's quite a bit of space that they cover with bark mulch. And the bed is overhung by a large maple tree, which sheds its samaras in vast quantities in the spring. I'll ask you what samaras are in a minute, Martin, but to finish the question first. If we put down the bark mulch early, they fall and fall, making a layer on top of the mulch, and we spend hours picking them off before they sprout, since blowing or raking would disturb the mulch. So if they mulch later after those samaras have dropped, would the layer of mulch suffocate them and stop them from sprouting, or would they just fight their way through? So I'm guessing samaras are seed pods or something, are they?
Yes, they are. And if you think of a seed like an Acer or, you know, the sycamore, which is a type of Acer, of course, they're a seed, a little round seed, and similar to an ash tree as well that we get. But they've got a wing on it, a little papery wing. So the idea is when they drop from the tree, they flutter down. And I remember as children, we used to get Acer seeds and throw them in there, and they whirl down like a helicopter,
like a helicopter.
And just spin down.
Yeah.
And it's just their natural way of dispersing in the wild. So instead of all dropping straight down, the wind will carry them further to spread the seed so that the trees can grow and colonize. So yes, it's a problem. The mulch. The problem is, if you only put a thin layer of mulch over the top of them, Jim, then they're going to grow through. Because what would happen, of course, in the wild is these seeds, the samara, would fall to the ground in the autumn, the fall, and then the leaves would fall off the trees, cover them in this deep leaf litter that would rot down gradually over winter, but it's still going to cover them. But then the seeds would grow through and grow towards the light, and they will grow quite a good distance to find light. So I think the only way you would smother them would, you'd have to put such a thick layer of bark mulch on that would be too much, and that would probably be detrimental to the plants in the border as well. So I think really the only way is potentially, you know, pulling them out while they're nice and small. So just spend a happy afternoon, store up a few of our podcasts.
Yeah, listen to a podcast.
And just go out there with your headphones on and you know, pull your samaras to your heart's content.
Fantastic. Yeah. All right, good stuff. Well, there is one other question that popped up on a YouTube and one of our YouTube videos from a couple of years ago, how to take shrub cuttings. Melissa Tracy asked, how do you know when it has enough roots to repot or put in the ground? So if you're making, if you've taken a cutting and you've put it in a pot, in fact, we'll put a link to the video in the show notes if people want to see how to do that. And then how do you know when the next stage happens?
Yeah, good question.
It is a good question, that, because the one thing I always tell people is when you put cuttings in pots or trays to try and avoid, keep pulling them to see if they've got roots.
Oh, but you've got to, haven't you?
You have.
It's too tempting.
But if you do it too often when those roots are forming, you're going to damage them. So normally, when the cutting, the top part of the cutting, starts to produce new leaves or new shoots, that's an indication it's rooted. And very often, if you're growing them in small pots or these cell trays, plug trays, if you look, you'll see a root coming out the bottom of the drainage hole. So, you know, look for signs of growth and a root coming out the bottom, and then gently, you know, take it out, and you should be okay. So, but don't just keep pulling them a week after putting them in, otherwise you'll never get
that'd be me. I've not got the patience for this. Just a reminder, if you've got a question for the team, drop us an email, info@potsandtrowels.com.
Exactly. And I've got a few jobs just to finish off if we've got time, very quickly, just in case people are looking for something to do in the garden. Because, you know, here we are now. It's third week in April, which is quite cool here in the UK at the moment. The weather's been mild. Nights turned a bit cool.
It's still a bit wet, though.
It's still wet as well. We're getting rain and cold nights. And we've had some really cold nights and a bit of ground frost over the last week here. So just be cautious if you're thinking of putting out any tender plants into the garden. Just hold back. You know, we can, in most parts of the UK, get frosts right into, you know, well into spring, May time. Certainly where we are in Lincolnshire, it's usually late in May before we're frost free. So if you've got tender plants, just keep them in a cold greenhouse or protect them with some fleece. You can do a little bit of pruning on your evergreens. Good time to do it if you've got any evergreens that are getting a little bit big. now's the time to get your secateurs and just give them a tidy up. Don't always have to trim them over and make them into a ball. You can still keep their natural shape. But if you do it now, they'll make that flush of new growth. And we're sowing beans, runner beans and French beans. We're doing them in the greenhouse. But again, it's too cold here to put them directly in the garden. We'd have to probably wait a few more weeks to sow the seeds into the soil. So we start them off in trays. And they do really well that way.
They do. And one of our Pots and Trowels video is talking about that. So you can have a look at exactly how to do that.
Exactly. I think that's the one that's out at the moment, isn't it? So, yes. So have a look at putting your seeds in and then you get these wonderful beans later on in the summer.
You have planted far too many.
Well, I like beans. You can never have too many beans.
I think there are still some in the freezer from last year, though. So we need to eat those.
Send me some.
Yeah. There you go.
Not that we're always patting ourselves on the back here, but did you realise we've hit 1 million views on YouTube?
No.
1 million views.
Wow. Oh, thank you.
1 million views across all the videos. So there you go. Just a little self-celebration.
Oh, brilliant.
So yeah, if you've not watched our videos before, you've happened upon the podcast, obviously all the links are in the show notes. You can go and watch. We do a weekly video every Thursday where Martin shows you something to do in the garden or meet somebody really interesting or an expert in their field and we have a chat with them.
We do, yeah. So, yeah. And, of course, the podcast, we'll be back with you again next Sunday. So speak to you then.
Bye.
Bye. Watch the videos on YouTube or Facebook, follow us on Instagram, Twitter or X, and subscribe to the podcast and never miss a thing. For more information, go to potsandtrowels.com.